Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A big win for steelworkers in the South. United Pilots picket over wages and more time off. Today on the show, we check in with the Ohio Federation of Teachers and later, how a union in New York won a five-year contract. Welcome to the Tuesday, May 16th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Melissa Cropper is going to be our first guest on the show today. She serves as president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org, and she's also secretary treasurer of the Ohio AFL-CIO. And our first conversation is going to deal with what happened in the State House last week. The teachers, many unions, the Ohio AFL-CIO will be mobilizing this summer to defeat what's called Senate Joint Resolution 2 on a special election set for August 8th. Now, this is an election that several months ago the lawmakers said we shouldn't have because they're too costly and nobody shows up. But you know how things can change. This legislation is a radical, and I mean radical, revision to Ohio's Constitution that will erode the principle of majority rule. It would amend the Constitution to require a 60% vote for passage of amendments instead of a simple majority requirement, which has been in place for over 100 years. Now, Melissa and many in labor right now, they're optimistic about defeating this because, well, we got some history here. Going back over 10 years ago, when we had SB 5, at that time, 62% of voters repealed an attack on workplace democracy. It was an attack on collective bargaining. They saw it again in 2015 and 2018, when 71% and 75% of voters respectively passed redistricting reforms that were intended to stop partisan gerrymandering. Well, we still haven't solved that problem. So that's the first point. We're also going to get into the state budget. There's some good news and there's some bad news. First, the good news. They are pleased, they being the Ohio Federation, pleased that the House continue to work on a fair school funding plan, which is a school funding formula providing school districts with the funds needed to educate their specific student population. Now, the bad news. Unfortunately, the House bill also expands private school vouchers to cover all families who make, you ready for this, 450% of the poverty level. That's a stretch. She'll give us some details on that. And good news, the KIPP school, that's a charter school in Columbus, where the educators last week, and we're talking about teachers, intervention specialists, social workers, paraprofessionals, they overwhelmingly won their union vote on Friday, May 5th, 67% to 33%. The new union covers more than 100 educators at four schools on a shared campus. We're talking primary, elementary, middle, and high schools. And I'll tell you, they overcame a huge union busting campaign. Very aggressive, very expensive. So hats off to those at the KIPP Education Campus in Central Ohio. Our next guest on the show is going to be Hattie Adams. Hattie is president of the Civil Service Employees Association in Westchester, New York. And they call themselves New York's leading union. They've been around since 1910. They currently have about 3,000 members. Website is csea9200.org. Hattie says, "We are workers who join together in solidarity to have clout at the bargaining table in the political arena and in our communities. We are individuals who know that you have to belong to be strong. And we negotiate with our employers from a position of strength that comes from our union membership. Well, talk about a position of strength. Recently, Hattie's union agreed on a new 5-year contract, which starts at the beginning of this year and ends at the end of 2027. The agreement covers compensation, insurance, certain leaves, and other items pertaining to the county's dedicated workforce. And from what I understand, this was not easy, but they were able to achieve 2.75% pay increases for the first 3 years of the agreement, and then 3% increases for the fourth and fifth year. The agreement is between the county and the Civil Service Employees Association, Local 1000, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFL-CIO, Westchester County, Local 860, Unit 9200. There's a lot there. So Hattie Adams will be our second guest here on the show. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. The segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management, offering fixed income, real estate, and equity investment options to clients nationwide. $17 billion in assets since 1928. BoydWatterson.com. Well, on Friday, workers at a factory in rural Georgia that builds electric school buses voted to join the United Steelworkers. The vote was 697 to 435. The factory in Fort Valley, Georgia, is run by the Blue Bird Corporation and will become one of the largest unionized workplaces in the South. An organizer with the steelworkers said the workers at the factory usually earn starting wages of $16, maybe $17 per hour, and that Bluebird has long made it a practice to hire less educated workers, some of whom have prison records. Some observers hope this union victory is a sign that new federal policies can encourage organizing efforts at companies receiving federal funds. Good point. Bluebird is a beneficiary of the infrastructure bill, which included a rebate program to promote the use of low-emission school buses and the Inflation Reduction Act, which authorized $5 billion over 5 years for clean school bus transportation. The bills also included provisions that subtly encourage recipients to change their approach to unionization. Now, let me give you an example. The Environmental Protection Agency, which administers the school bus rebate program, will require any company receiving funds to report whether it has committed to labor neutrality or voluntary recognition and explain the benefits it offers to employees. Under last year's infrastructure bill, federal money cannot be used to suppress a union election. The steelworkers filed unfair labor practice charges against Bluebird in April, alleging the company did just that. I mean, the law was pretty clear on this. And this is so timely because this week is Infrastructure Week, proclaimed by our friends at the North American Building Trades. Now, let me go on. There's more to the story. The experience of the workers at Bluebird suggests some caution as to whether those measures will actually discourage union busting. You know how companies are. They never give up. They're sneaky about this. One of the workers is Cynthia Harden. She's been there for about 5 years, and she said there were a number of meetings where workers were shown slideshows that explained the voting process, and they showed the ballots in those slideshows marked no, with the message reading, the company could go bankrupt if the union won. Okay? And she said there were suddenly a bunch of food trucks at lunch with banners saying, we love our employees. Those of you involved in unionization campaigns know the stories, and this is just one of many. But I think it's pretty interesting. We've got an administration, you know, that is very union friendly, and that Infrastructure and Jobs Act is very, very powerful. And it's got a lot of components that deals with the way workers are being treated. If they want to go union, they should be allowed to go union. United Airlines pilots marched on picket lines last Friday calling for salary increases and time off protections. Now, the pilots could be the third major U.S. airline to authorize a strike. This follows affirmative votes from American and Southwest. U.S. law requires that a federal mediator declare further negotiations pointless before airline workers can legally strike or companies can legally lock workers out. The United Airlines pilots have worked without a raise for 4 years, while negotiating on a new contract. American, Southwest, and United's pilots unions have baselined their current negotiations against the Delta Airlines deal, which was ratified in early March. In addition to higher salaries, the unions are seeking limitations on management's ability to require pilots to fly on their days off. The industry anticipates record-breaking travel this summer. Busy summer flight schedules, along with the shortage of pilots and these strike authorizations, puts the unions in a very, very good bargaining space. Let's go to Iran. Listen to this. Authorities there arrested 8 workers accused of inciting strikes at the South Pars North Dome mega field, which is the largest gas reserve in the world. The strikes began earlier this year. The workers, get this, they're calling for a 79% increase in wages. 79%. And there's more. They want freedom of association and an end to discriminatory practices. Keep in mind, this is Iran. That reserve, by the way, employs nearly 40,000 people. Authorities announced efforts to replace approximately 4,000 workers striking for better wages and working conditions. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Melissa Cropper on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to Melissa Cropper on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, we got some educator news from our brothers and sisters on the West Coast. Primarily Oakland. Oakland's unified school district's 34,000 students are back in the classroom today. This is after a seven-day educators strike. The Oakland Education Association announced that they had signed a tentative agreement with the school district. This was over the weekend. The union's demands included pay increases and more student support resources. The early talks idled due to a disagreement over some of the teachers' common good demands. The tentative contract provides the union the ability to appoint 8 of a 13-member steering committee managing a $66 million state grant for the creation and bolstering of community schools. This is an issue we talked about on the show many, many times. These schools provide wraparound services for students and families in addition to fulfilling their education mission. The union, by the way, also negotiated for more resources to support schools with a 40% or higher Black population, free bus passes for all district students, and a new process for carrying out school closures. So congratulations to the union out in Oklahoma, the Oakland Unified School District, back at school today after a seven-day strike. Interesting conversation there. One that we've had many times with Melissa Cropper, who's joining us on line number one right now as president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Sounds like they moved the needle in the right direction. What's your thoughts on that, Melissa?
Oh, well, that's a fantastic story to start with, because I've been doing visits with our locals across the state the past week or two, following up on a teacher survey we did. And the number one thing I keep hearing is how we need more supports in our schools for students. Our students just are bringing so many issues into the classroom. There's so many societal issues that we're dealing with that in the absence of having these wraparound services, it's making it really difficult to teach. So I'm glad that we're seeing more and more unions starting to negotiate this stuff into their contracts, because we need these extra supports if we're going to keep our teachers in the classrooms, because it's just becoming overwhelming right now.
You know, it's funny that the common good demands that definitely got my attention. We had a conversation with one of the former strikers at Rutgers yesterday on the show. And that was one of the issues there, too, along with pay raises. The adjuncts did really well in that one. And by the way, if you missed that show, go to awfpodcast.com. Well, we've got some issues here in the state of Ohio, Melissa. The legislature decided to turn the screws on voters last week and pass the resolution. I know there. And you know what's amazing? It's like I saw the crowds down there. You were down there. I mean, so many unions, it's like they were completely ignored. I mean, people were raising their voices, they're shouting, but nobody seemed to listen. So tell me your view of what's going to happen here, because I guess this is going to be one heck of a union summer, right?
Oh, yes, I was kind of hoping for a little bit quieter summer this year, but it's not going to happen.
Nope.
They put this on the ballot in August to change how we pass our constitutional amendments in the state. And, you know, they put it in August purposely, one, because they want to get ahead of women's reproductive rights in case it's on the ballot in November. But two, they think they can slide it in August when we won't have very many people turn out, and they can just slip it on through. But like you indicated, I mean, this is not going to slip through. There were crowds down here multiple days at the state house, just really, you know, trying to stop the legislature from passing this horrendous law to send this to the ballot. And it's across the aisle. I mean, 4 former governors have come out against this, the Democrat and Republican. 5 former attorney generals have come out against this. So this is not popular with anyone. I don't know. I didn't update myself with the most recent numbers, but I know as of a week or two ago, over 314 had been in to testify on this bill. Only 4 of them were in favor of the bill. So 310 people testified in opposition to this bill. So I think we're gonna see, like we saw with Senate Bill 5 way back in 2011, we're gonna see the masses come out again and reject this. And that's what we've got to spread the word, make sure people know to turn out in August. But I think this is going to be a resounding defeat, because I think they're making the same mistake that they did before, in that they during Senate Bill 5, is they don't recognize what grassroots level people want and what kind of power grassroots people have. And that when the issues like this come up, it's not labor, it's not the community, it's not a certain group of people, it's all of us together. Labor is part of the community. We all stand together on our democratic rights, and I just think people are going to come out and thoroughly reject this.
Boy, I hope so. Here's what scares me. You know, SB 5 happened in 2011, and during that time, Ohio has definitely turned more conservative. There's no doubt about that. And the redistricting definitely pushed that along. But I'm just wondering, with that being said, it probably would fire you up even more, don't you think?
Yeah, and I hope people, we need people to recognize that, again, the extreme right wing is trying to push this as a way to stop abortion, and they're also using the threat of losing your guns. But we have people need to realize this is about any issue that we ever want to put on the ballot will be almost impossible to even get on the ballot. If we wanted to put something on there about a minimum wage, difficult, I mean, almost impossible to put it on and pass. Something about vouchers, almost impossible to put it on and pass. So this isn't about one issue. This is about the rights of the people in Ohio who've had the right for over 100 years to get something on the ballot and then vote on it and have a majority win to determine what our Constitution says for this state. And again, I really want to emphasize, it's not just that it raises the threshold to 60% to pass it, so it's not a one voice, one vote anymore. It will raise the threshold to 60% to pass it. But even really more egregious than that, is it will take signatures. Currently, you only have to have signatures from 44 of our 88 counties to get it on the ballot. It will take signatures from all 88 counties to even get it on the ballot to start with. So that means our smallest county in this state, if we had a small, really conservative county that didn't want to see this on the ballot, one small county out of the whole state could get something from even getting on the ballot. And that's why we say they are turning into minority rule instead of majority rule.
Yeah, yeah. It's certainly a power grab, so we'll see what happens on the summer. And the other part of this special election, which they said we shouldn't do anymore because they're so costly that they're like $20 million. And I heard one lawmaker say, it was a conservative lawmaker say, no, it's not going to be $20 million. It's going to be more like $10 million. So they're trying to downplay.
Okay, right. boy, can't we think of a lot of ways we could use that $10 million. Again, it makes me sick to my stomach to think about it. They just passed that law. That law just went into effect on April 7th of 2023. April 7th of this year, that law just went into effect. No more special elections in August, which, by the way, probably impacts schools more than anybody. Schools can't put a levy on the ballot in August now. But then turn right around before that law had even gone into effect, turn around was trying to pass something to have a special election in August for the legislature. So it's like these legislators act like they are above the law. And like I said, they can't get enough power. Laws don't matter. And by the way, there is a legal challenge to this on that special election piece. So there is a legal challenge out there to that. We'll see what happens with that. But if that legal challenge doesn't go through, then we just have to make sure that everyone shows up in August and makes it a priority to defeat this.
Okay, so if they beat it in the courts, they would just move this to November, or is it too premature to come out with that?
I am not sure about that. I think the challenge is around whether you can have an August election. So I think it would just change when they could actually have the election. So we'll still have to work to defeat it, yes.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the state budget. Looks like we have some good news and some not so good news. Let's start off with the good news with we can never get
That's
it all together.
The story of Ohio.
Can we?
Yes. usually is we have some bad news and some not quite so bad news, but yeah.
Okay, fair funding. Let's start right there.
Yes, the House actually did pass through the next phase of the Fair School Funding Formula, which was, you know, fantastic. It's a six-year plan, so the first 2 years got phased in last budget cycle. They're phasing in the next 2 years this budget cycle. And so that's, and they updated the, what we call the the inputs into the formula. So the formula had been based upon 2018 data. They updated the data to reflect cost for 2022 so that they're calculating the right amount of money that needs to go into the formula. So that was all really good news. Now, on the bad news side of the House, they did also increase vouchers. The governor had recommended 400% of poverty level. The House raised that to 450% of poverty level. So we're not, you know, we're not thrilled about that, but we are very happy with what the House did with the budget.
Now, where does that take us at 450% of the poverty level? Do you have any numbers on that? I mean, that
It's approximately a family of four can make $135,000. That's what $135,000. I believe I just read last night that basically that would allow about four out of every five students in Ohio to be eligible for a voucher. So it's almost a universal voucher.
Wow. Did you say $135,000 income?
For a family of four. Yeah. Yes.
Wow. Okay. And now, where is this? This is in the House right now. They're moving forward with it at
this
a rapid pace.
It's passed out of the House, so it's in the Senate now. And the word is that the Senate is not necessarily in favor of the Fair School Funding formula. I think it's in jeopardy in the Senate now. And I read two different things. I've read two different things on this. One, they may put up their own formula, or two, and this makes absolutely no sense to me at all, but when I just said they updated the data to 2022, they want to roll it back to 2020. Now, I don't know why you would create a formula and then use old data to fund the formula, because it just means you don't have enough money there to actually use the formula, so it doesn't really make any sense to me.
No.
But a lot of what they do doesn't make sense to me. And then also they're looking at a universal voucher, basically. Yes. So everyone would be eligible for a voucher.
You mentioned data going back to 2020. I mean, take a look at what happened since then with inflation. I mean, none of that makes sense. I mean,
right.
Gosh.
Yeah. Right, right.
All right.
Right. So, of course, we're really pushing back on the voucher piece, as we always do. But I think we're really trying to push now, just as we were talking about a few minutes ago, how there are so many other issues that impact education, the common good stuff that we were talking about. So, you know, insecure food, insecure housing, lack of access to early childhood. All those things are funded at a 200% of poverty level or below. Yet they want to fund vouchers at a 450% poverty level or higher. And we keep arguing all those other things. If you would fund those at 450% of poverty level, that would have a much greater impact on education outcomes than giving away vouchers. So I get a little fired up when we talk about this.
I know. You're on a roll today. Well, let's talk about some good news here. And you and I have had discussions about the KIPP school. I guess this is a campus in Central Ohio, and they had a union vote. It wasn't easy. Maybe you can tell us the union busting tactics that went on during that time. But on Friday, May 5th, they won by 67-33%. So you've got to be pretty happy about what happened here. Why don't you talk about your role in all of this, Melissa?
Thrilled about what happened here. I mean, KIPP is a national charter school. They have one in Ohio, which is in Columbus. And these teachers came to us a while back when the former union, and they went through some really aggressive union busting. You know, mandatory meetings. They brought in outside union busting consultants. And the last 3 weeks leading up to their election, every morning, 7:40, got some kind of email about why they shouldn't join the union. Flyers hanging up about why you vote no for a union. I had to file four unfair labor charges against them, and already two of them have been found to have merit. So it was just aggressive. Over $100,000 spent by a KIPP charter school to stop the union. And by the way, that's public tax dollars. But to stop the union, but we just had an incredible organizing committee there. The members at KIPP Charter School were so solid and so committed to wanting a union that they ended up winning by 67-33% margin, which is just absolutely incredible given all the aggressive union busting they went through. So this is a huge, huge victory for us. We're really, really excited about this.
Well, you should be. And we're seeing so much of that. There's so many people organizing right now. And those, you know, the management realizes what's going on. So they're pulling out all the stops. I mean, that's a big industry, union busting in itself. We did a show on that not too long ago. It's like $3 to $4 million per day. And some of these consultants, they call themselves, they're making like a couple $1,000s a day. They're making like $350 an hour to do what you just talked about, to come down on people and say, hey, you don't want a union. The schools are going to close. The company's going to go bankrupt. Yeah, I mean, you heard all the stories.
Right.
So,
right.
Okay, first contract. Do you know when we're going to start getting into that arena or what?
Yes, we've already told them we want to get to the table and start negotiating right away. So we'll hopefully get some dates set up soon and jump right into contract negotiations. Again, our organizing committee there, while waiting for the election, went ahead and started talking to other teachers, other members, to start creating a list of priorities for what they'd want to see in a contract. So our side's ready to roll, and hopefully we get management to the table fairly quickly and get this process started of getting a first contract.
Very good. Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce, oh.aft.org, for more information on all the stories we just talked about. Well, you take care. Get ready for a good union summer here. A lot of activity. Okay.
That's right. Thank you.
And we're there right with you. So you take care, stay safe, stay strong, and stay in touch, okay?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go to Westchester County, New York, and talk with Hattie Adams, president of the Civil Service Employees Association. They just reached a 5-year contract. More to come right after this.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-union.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. 216-666-2185. You can find them online at ulagency.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next portion of America's Workforce, sponsored by the good folks at iMed. Switching to managed vision care may save your fund money. And at the same time, deliver a better experience. So here's what you do. Go to imed.com/union and you will learn a whole lot more. All right, let's go to Westchester County, New York. And joining us on line number 2 today is Hattie Adams. Hattie is president. Well, actually, she's president of 2 unions. But we're going to start off with the Civil Service Employees Association. This would be 9200, Unit 9200. And they represent altogether about 3,000 members, and they're affiliated, I should say, with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And we're going to talk about the five-year contract. But first, Hattie Adams, welcome to the show. Talk to me a little bit about yourself. You got involved, what is it, over 20 years ago in the union movement. What kind of led you in that direction? Do you have any family members that were union members or what?
Actually, I do. And I want to say thank you so much for having me. I do have family members that were in unions. My husband was in DC 37 many, many, many years ago. And I just felt the need to be involved with something so powerful when I started.
Uh-huh. Now, you are president of two, what is it, Local 860 and Unit 9200, is that right?
That's correct.
And how long have you served as president in both of those?
Well, actually, I'm just going to go back a little bit. In 2013 to 2017, I was the treasurer for Unit 9200, which is CFCA Unit 9200. And from 2017 to 2021, I was first vice president of Unit 9200. And then from 2021 to present, I am president of Unit 9200.
Okay, good, good, good. Now, talk to me about what kind of work, what do the workers do? I mean, these are all municipal workers. Can you give us some details on that?
Well, let me just start off by saying we're CSDA. We are Westchester County, County of Westchester, employees of Westchester County, and we make Westchester work. So we have various departments, and we have great workers. We have start with DPW, DEF, we have probation, we have county clerk, we have Department of Social Services, public safety, emergency services, health department, consumer protection, district attorney's office, office of the disabled. I could keep going. We have so many different departments, yes.
Now, how did you navigate through the pandemic? That was a challenging time for you and your members, right?
It was very challenging. At that time, I was first vice president, and we had a great leader at that time as our president. And, you know, one of our main focus during the pandemic, before we even thought of ourselves, we thought of making sure that every department had something in place for our membership. And we went through just about all the buildings to make sure that the safety protocols were put in place, whether it was plexiglass, whether it was any type of PPE, hand sanitizer, you name it, gloves, masks. We made sure that everything was in place before we could even think of ourselves, because this was a very serious, serious time for all of us.
Now, did you get any pushback from management to get what was needed? I mean, we had to protect our workers. Did they fight you on any of this?
Well, what's interesting, the first, from what I can remember, no one knew what COVID was. No one knew how to handle COVID. So when it first hit, everyone is scrambling to basically trying to figure out what is COVID and how do we handle this. I won't say we got pushback, because as a union, we're there for our membership. And if a member called and said, I'm still here working, there's no gloves, we were told we were going to have this, immediately CSDA was on that site, and we were making sure that those things were present. One of the things I will say with the Department of Public Works, and as well as our county administration, anything they said that we needed, just call them directly if a department did not provide it for our members.
Okay, that's
good to
hear.
So that was the open door that we had, yes.
Yeah, yeah. How are we now? Are we pretty safe? You in your estimation? And I guess this would be a two-part question. What about members getting sick during the pandemic? Did you lose a number of them?
Unfortunately, we did lose members. We lost members, and some of the members lost family members. It was really a trying time, and you know, as a support system. And the sad part about some of this was we didn't even know we lost some members, because a lot of our departments were teleworking at the time. So you really did not know who is where until basically, you know, the county reopened.
Sure.
Although we were closed, one of the things I will say, and kudos to our membership, is that they still provided the vital services to the clients, even teleworking. But it was a very, very sad time and moment when you did hear that we lost, you know, some of our members. It was devastating.
I know New York got hit really bad, especially the transit workers, too, New York City. One of the locals there, they lost well over 100 brothers and sisters there. Yeah, it was crazy, just crazy. But no, so to right now, though, you mentioned teleworking. Is that still part of the mix today?
Well, not all departments can telework. That's the tricky part. And, you know, we do have some departments that do, you know, still telework, maybe 1 or 2 days a week. But not all departments can telework. I wish they could, but they unfortunately, there's certain important information that cannot be removed from the work site to the home site. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we still have a very few. And the other thing is, with the devastation loss of some of our members, some departments had to bring in the EAP program, which is the Employee Assistant Program that Westchester County has, to come
good
to
stuff.
Console, you know, the department, some of the departments.
Okay, it's good to hear that things are moving in the right direction, Hattie. I got to take a quick break here. Hattie Adams joining us here on behalf of the Civil Service Employees Association in Westchester County, New York. They recently negotiated a 5-year contract. We'll talk about that next right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Quick note here, the Writers Guild of America now entering week number 3 of striking, and they denied a Broadway request to allow the Tony Awards to air as scheduled. Now, that ceremony, mind you, is a minor event for Hollywood with only about 4 million viewers last year, but it is one of theater's biggest marketing opportunities. Attendance on Broadway has yet to return to pre-pandemic levels, and many of the shows were relying on the boost that the Tony Awards often brings to ticket sales. The Tony Awards Management Committee now considering alternative options, including postponing the awards till after the strike or hosting an untelevised ceremony on the original date, which would be the 11th of next month, June 11th. So right now, though, the Writers Guild, lots of solidarity there. We're talking about 11,000 brothers and sisters on strike, and all live shows are pretty much off the air right now until they negotiate. And I understand they're not even talking right now, so we'll keep you posted on that one. Let's go back to Westchester County, New York. Joining us today is Hattie Adams, who's president of the Civil Service Employees Association. Actually, she's a president of two unions, 9200 and 860, and they're all affiliated with American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. So, Hattie, talk to me about this contract here. It's not too often that you get a five-year contract. I mean, it's tough to achieve a three-year contract. It's tough to achieve any kind of contract, yes, mind you.
Yes.
But 5 years. Talk to me about this. When did the negotiations begin? How difficult they were? Go ahead.
Well, this is very exciting for us, and we are very grateful to God and to everyone that was involved. Our contract ended. We did a rollover for 2022. And our contract ended December 31st of 2022. And for 2021, we did a rollover. So for December 31st, 2022, we put our team together. We knew that this contract was going to end. And according to our contractually, we had 6 months prior to the contract ending that we were able to start our negotiations. So myself and my 9200 team, just a few of our officers, we put a team together, and we wanted to make sure this team was strong, this team, you know, had vision. This team was very passionate about what they believed and also what our membership would want. So the first thing we did was we got together. I had a folder full of emails of requests, you know, throughout the year. And then we put that together, we consolidated, and we came up with some questions. So with a survey that we sent out to our membership, we were able to get, we received, I believe we sent out about 3,000, and we received about maybe, I want to say about close to 2,000 responses. With all that being said, this team did put it, categorized it, you know, first, what was the request, first, second, or third. And then we were ready. We called our lead negotiator, which was Larry Sparber. He's also a labor relations specialist. And we said, this is what we want, and let's go. So when we sat at the table with the administration, the county administration, you know, we got this done in 3 months. It wasn't a rush. It was difficult at times, but we were able to sit there as professionals and have discussions. We agreed, we disagreed, but by the end of the day, we came up with this phenomenal contract. Not phenomenal, but this great contract, I would say.
Yeah, I'd say so. What was the major sticking point during those talks? Was there one that stood out more than others?
I would say, you know, when you have, we're not like a fire department, and we're not police. So when you negotiate for police, you're negotiating for all police. When you're negotiating for fire, you're negotiating for all fire. We have various departments, so we have to think of everyone. And the difficult part was, you know, you're trying to get something for probation, you're trying to get something for social services, you're trying to get something for the other departments. It's difficult because, you know, we already have a great contract. But this is just things that are adding to the needs of what's going on today. What may have worked 10 years ago when it was originated, or 20 years, today is different. Percentage is always important, and we did not want to touch our health insurance, which we did not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, everybody likes to attack that one. I was reading earlier, pay increases 2.75% for the first 3 years, then 3% for years 4 and 5. Is that accurate?
That's correct. Now, let me just say this. The last contract that there are no zeros, the last time they got 3 zeros and 1%. And also, with the past administration, which was the Astorino administration, we didn't have a contract for 7+ years. And this is me speaking. I was on a negotiation team. I watched. And Astorino actually did not care about the employees of Westchester County. And he fired He even fired the president of the CSEA at the time, because this was a strong, you know, president, and she fought for her people. He fired the president of CSEA. He did not care. He didn't realize that these people had families. They were fired like 2 weeks before Christmas. So he did not care. But, you know, our new county exec came in, which is George Latimer. He brought hope back to the county. And he had a team, which is Deputy County Exec Ken Jenkins and Joan McDonald and the rest of the team. They brought hope back to the county. And, you know, when he sends out his emails to our membership or to county employees in general, he addresses everyone as dear colleagues. This is a man who listens. His team listens. And, you know, when you can communicate, there's so much more you can get done versus just, you know, you have this leadership role like the Astoria administration. You're going to fire all the people at the bottom to put all your people in. Not saying it's a good or bad thing, but to put all your people in at the top salaries, and never mind the people who you just fired that have families.
Yeah.
You know, and that was very, very, very sad and disgusting. And when George Latimer came, I mean, literally, we were near bankrupt. But the beauty of it today is this team, this administration, Latimer administration, has brought hope back to the county, and we got the job done in a timely fashion. So, again, we didn't rush this deal. We took our time. It just so happened, like I said, the negotiation team, a bunch of professionals, and we knew what we want. So we didn't have to do a whole lot of small talk. There was no yelling and screaming across the table. But everyone spoke their mind and their opinion, and we got this job done.
Hattie, I can't tell you how many times I said on this show, elections matter. It's so important, because if you get the right people in office, good things happen. Good things. I mean, you're perfect example, what you just told us here. Perfect example here.
Yes. If I could just say one more thing. In CSEA, we don't see red or blue. We see who works with and who wants to do best for CSEA. And, you know, this goes across the county, but we don't look at red or blue when we make decisions on voting. Or endorsing candidates. Mm-hmm. We don't see red or blue.
Hattie, with that being said, is your union pretty politically active? It's important that we get the right people. It doesn't matter which party they're from, but if they support workers, you're going to make sure that they get in. Is that happening in your local?
Absolutely. We have a political action committee on every level. The units, the local, the region, as well as our statewide. And right now, our political action chair is Chris Franks with Westchester Local 860. And yes, we are definitely involved. We're trying to get involved with the school board election, because our school people, you know, our school district school workers, they need contracts also. And that's what we're out there trying to provide, to make sure that everyone gets a fair contract. We are in unstable times right now, and we're, you know, with this mess that's going on with this debt ceiling, we don't know if it's going to pass, if it's going to fail. We want to make sure that our members are solid. So yes, Amen. We are very much involved with the political action committees.
The battle never ends. Never ends. All right, Hattie. Well, congratulations on that 5-year deal. Union strong. That's what it's all about. Hattie Adams, president of the Civil Service Employees Union, and that is Unit 9200. Here's the website. It's CSEAUnit9200.org, and she serves as president of the Westchester Local 860 and Unit 9200, like I just mentioned here. She's got her hands full. She's doing a great job, obviously, getting that 5-year deal. Got to salute her for that. Hey, you take care. Stay safe and stay in touch, okay?
Thank you so much. And just a quick shout out to the 860 team, my executive officers, and to our Unit 92 executive board. I just want to say I can't do this by myself. And to our membership, we need each and every one of you. Thank you. Stay union. Stay strong.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we check in with the American Federation of Government Employees, and we talk about diversity in the building trades. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.